Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who never returned his copy of Tropic of Cancer back to the library. Here is the captain.
Yes, Mr. Bookman, I returned that book, Joy Boy. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today we are sipping on another delicious beer from the great folks at Tactical Brewing Company. This is Fog of Hostility. It's an Imperial New England IPA. It's dank, it's piney, and citrusy. It's also 9% ABV, so best to drink this one at home in your garage. Garage grade, how about 4.25 bottle caps? Now, time for some praise and thank yous. First up, a cheers to the Angry Italian in Rialto, California.
And a big shout to Hannah in Lake Stevens, Washington.
Next, we have a shout to the always kind and never littering Meg in Buffalo.
And a big We Like Your Jib goes out to Chris and Shira in Toronto, Canada.
Here's a cheers to Noah and Laura in Tullahoma, Tennessee. And last but certainly not least, we have Augustine and Sean Jennifer in Chicagoland. Everyone we mentioned went to truecrimegarage.com, and they helped us out with this week's beer fund.
Yeah, BWERUN, Beer Run. For Beer Run t-shirts, check out our store page. We also have Be Good, Be Kind, and Don't Litter shirts, and so much more. Check out the store today, and that's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. On March 14th, 2000, it's now been 1 month since 9-year-old Aisha DeGree disappeared. On this day, Aisha's parents appear on the Montel Williams TV show. The DeGree family, along with Aisha's basketball coach, his name is Chad Wilson, they did interviews on the Montel Williams show that aired that day. And we also have America's Most Wanted and the Oprah Winfrey Show that did segments on the case as well. On March 22nd, the DeGree family put up a billboard at the spot where Jeff, our eyewitness, said that he saw Aisha run into the woods. That same day, Sheriff Crawford stated that his department was trying to rule out a handful of unnamed suspects. They contacted local sex offenders, spoke to everyone who may have had contact with Aisha. The FBI created a psychological profile of Aisha's abductor, which has never been released to the public. I can't remember, and I was scouring my notes to try to find the exact date, Captain, But there was a statement from the sheriff, Sheriff Crawford, at some point. This would be within weeks of her disappearance, saying that the parents were cleared as suspects or no longer considered to be suspects. Remember, we had him stating within 12 hours or 24 hours of her going missing that we're looking for clues and everyone's a suspect. Well, at some point, at least on the record in that newspaper on that day, he says the parents are no longer suspects.
Right, and just like you talked about before, we have no dog scent or any real evidence other than eyewitnesses to back up the idea that she left the house on her own. Now how she did that, I think that is debatable, but we know that at some point we have to trust these eyewitnesses because there's so many of them and all their stories seem very similar.
Not only are the stories similar, they're reporting these independently of one another, which adds to the credibility. And then when you go to the areas where they're saying that they saw Aisha, we're finding Aisha's belongings.
Right.
So, I mean, it's this happened. I mean,
yeah, confirmation of the eyewitness accounts.
Right. So what that means is investigators believe that Aisha left her residence of her own accord. But of course, why and for what is really anyone's guess. We mentioned yesterday that people have said she was upset about a basketball game. I just find that incredibly difficult to believe that the outcome of that basketball game would really, I mean, look, it's cold and raining. It's a thunderstorm. As you pointed out yesterday, people have said that she was scared of the dark, scared of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
She's nine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that we need to like circle and underline a bazillion times. Even the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children say that typically they rarely see anyone run away under the age of 12. So a basketball game, I'm upset about a basketball game, but I'm scared of the dark and scared of dogs.
Well, I'm scared of storms as well.
And that's what I keep coming back to. If one were to run away, this is not the ideal time to do it. It seems to me like if there was something going on at your home or you're upset about a basketball game or what have you, you could pick a different time to run away. You could go, well, maybe I'll wait 24 more hours. Maybe it won't be raining then.
Yeah, and we don't have anybody after the game other than the initial shock of her losing or the initial emotions of her losing. Everybody says she bounced back. She was fine during her brother's game. She was fine during a sleepover.
And one thing that we don't have that's not public information, but law enforcement might be fully aware of this. One thing we are not armed with is the knowledge of when that backpack was packed up. That could be fairly important. And we got to keep in mind, too, law enforcement may know this because they're not going into this blind. She's a 9-year-old child. Her parents are very involved in her life.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to go to mom and dad, especially within those first few hours. These are the questions you're asking. We need to try to determine what she may have taken with her. So, mom, dad, tell us what items of hers are missing from her room. And so that's how they come up with this is what she probably took with her. Now, based off of the items you believe that she took with her that are missing from your home, you can then put together a different type of timeline of when she potentially packed up that bag. It's very easy for mom to say, hey, I washed that basketball uniform right after a game. I do it every time. So she must have packed it up afterwards. Or she didn't wear this to the slumber party. You see where I'm going with this? You can determine these things, and law enforcement may in fact know that. My suspicion here, one thing that's been pointed out is that her fourth grade class at Falston Elementary School, they were recently reading the Whipping Boy book, which is a book that I remember we read when I was when I was a kid in school. This is by Sid Fleischman. The book centers around a story of a prince and a common child who receives lashes on behalf of the prince. So if the prince does something bad, it's the common child that gets physically punished for this. The two create this unlikely friendship, and they decide to run away together, and they go off on some adventures, and then they both return safely later. So some people pointed out maybe this is a possibility. Maybe she's going off on some adventure. I don't know. I feel confident about certain things in this case. And what I can say is I feel confident that for her to have left in the middle of the night under those conditions, weather conditions, she's either A, running away from something, or B, running to something. There was something that was of urgency that required leaving that night.
Yeah, I disagree, but we can argue till we're blue in the face on whether or not she was sleepwalking or where she was heading to. I just don't know what would be so urgent or what kind of con somebody would have to coax this girl out that's afraid of the dark, afraid of storms, afraid of dogs, 9 years old, to leave her house in the middle of the night without telling anybody.
In the summer of 2000, just a few months after she went missing, there was a major tip that came in for the case, and this came out of the county jail in Mecklenburg. An inmate, his name Baron Ramsey, started making collect calls to the Charlotte Observer and the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office, insisting that he knew what happened to the girl. He's 32 years old at the time of this event. He says that he and another man were heading back to Shelby, driving on NC-18 in the early morning hours of February 14th, this after buying drugs in Hickory, which would be 28 miles north of Fallston. 9.1 miles of that would be on this highway of NC-18. He says that the other man was driving a pickup truck and that they struck a girl as she was crossing the road. He says that the girl was still alive when the driver put her in the back of the pickup. Ramsey says that the driver dropped him off at home and left with the girl. A few days later, Ramsey said that the man returned to take him fishing on Moss Lake near Kings Mountain. Ramsey says that he helped the man. Obviously, he knows this man's name. It's just not printed in the paper. He helped the man dump the now dead girl's body in the lake. The Kings Mountain area is about 19 miles southeast of Fallston, of Aisha's home.
Mm-hmm.
Ramsey says he was reporting this months later because, one, his conscience was bothering him, and two, he's facing a long federal prison stay, and he was hoping for a deal. Ramsey robbed a Bessemer City bank in April of 2000, so after the girl went missing. Investigators searched NC-18 for car parts and found nothing. They're looking for evidence that there would have been a hit and run or some type of accident. They were doing that the day that she went missing and the day after. They, based off of his statements, they dragged Moss Lake twice and even used an infrared underwater camera and dive teams, but found nothing. They found zero.
Yeah.
No evidence of Aisha at all. In October of 2000, they moved the inmate. They moved Baron Ramsey to the Cleveland County Jail because Ramsey tells them, hey, let's put me here. We can arrange for a meeting with the driver of the pickup that hit the girl and had me help him dispose of her body.
Yeah.
We can have him come and meet me here. Okay, so they move him to this Cleveland County Jail. Once he's there, Ramsey, along with other inmates, they plan to escape, but somehow the guards figure out their plan and they stop this escape plan.
Yeah, because they figured out they're dumbasses.
So the authorities are left wondering, look, she's not where you said she was, or not where you said we would find her. Was this all just a lie so you could get to Cleveland County Jail and try to make an escape? And if you can't make the escape, is this like a really good plan? Because then maybe you could throw this other guy under the bus and receive some type of deal from us, whether we found her or not.
Typical criminal.
The authorities say that they were suspicious of him from the get-go. They were suspicious of him, especially after this escape plan was discovered. And he failed several polygraph tests in regards to the information that he provided to
Surprise.
Law enforcement. So,
surprise.
It doesn't seem like there's anything really here. In fact, authorities have been on the record stating that they do not believe Ramsey at all, and they think he had nothing to do with why she is still missing. And her family has said the same thing too, that they just don't believe this Ramsey guy's story.
Yeah, but the point of contact though makes a lot of sense to me, because you hear about, you know, in the Mara Murray case or a Brian Schaefer or something like that, where, oh, well, maybe they just got hit by a vehicle and then somebody had to dispose of the body. Well, what would be the motive? Well, when the guy's telling you, well, we had a bunch of drugs and we're criminals anyways, and we got a bunch of drugs and now we got this girl that we hit. I wouldn't believe that you would find a bunch of evidence, because she's 9. She's small. How much damage is she going to do to that vehicle? So the story starts out as plausible, I believe. Plausible enough where the cops said, we got to see where this goes. But like you said, the story starts falling apart pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, and if you're going to hope to receive any type of deal at all, or even if you're just trying to do some good, at the very least, maybe her body could be where you say it's going to be.
Yeah.
That would be a good starting point. We know that not to be the case. On August 5th of that same year, she's now been missing for several months, and Aisha would have celebrated her 10th birthday. Now, February 14th, 2001 gets us up to the one-year marker. Aisha's now been missing for 1 year. Her parents, have their 13th year wedding anniversary, and they said to the papers, you know, that's something we will no longer celebrate. Of course, we're still married, still in love with one another. We just cannot celebrate anything
right
on that day going forward. August 3rd of that same year, 2001, Terry Fleming, he's the owner of Precision Grading. He's working on a construction project in neighboring Burke County. He uncovered Aisha's missing book bag. And how does he know that it's hers? Well, it has her name and telephone number, and some reports state her address as well, written in the bag.
Hey, and how far away was this from where she went missing?
Okay, so the book bag was located more than 26 miles from her family's home. So this would be north. This is in a different direction from where she was seen walking that morning. The general description of it is this, Captain, that buried off of Highway 18, the book bag was found 18 months after Aisha disappeared. The book bag was double wrapped in black plastic trash bags, found more than 26 miles from her family's home in a different direction from where she had been walking. The book bag was found off of NC 18, about 6 miles south of Morganton, which is almost 30 miles north of the intersection of NC 18 and NC 180. Remember, that's where she was roughly seen last.
Yeah.
It was found in a spot about 50 yards off of the highway. Here's a full description of what was found in the bag, although I would like to throw out a buyer beware here, as I don't think officially there was ever a full inventory of what was in the bag that was released to the public. But online, this was the most comprehensive list that I could find, so I thought it was worth mentioning. So they say that Aisha's black book bag and black Tweety Bird purse were missing from her room after she disappeared, along with a pair of blue jeans with a red stripe, black sneakers, a long-sleeved white shirt with purple lettering, a red vest with black trim, black overalls with Tweety Bird on them, and a long-sleeved black and white shirt. Also, we have Aisha's house key that would have been in her book bag. Now, of course, investigators searched this area for several days after this find. I mean, this is a major find in the investigation. All they found in this area, Captain, was they found some animal bones, which one would expect to find. They also found a pair of men's khaki pants that were found.
Jake from State Farm.
The khaki pants thing is super weird to me, but the statement that they put out at the time was that they didn't believe that the pants had any connection to Aisha's book bag or to Aisha's case.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know how they were able to determine that, if it's something that, I mean, you might be able to look at something and determine that it's been there for well over 18 months. It's
called science.
Or maybe they have other reasons to believe that. Now,
well, you also, you have this book bag that is put in two trash bags and buried. So why wouldn't they take the same precautions with the pants if they were connected?
That brings us to another piece here in the case where you really gotta sift through the details to have a full idea of what's going on
because when I get rid of a pair of pants, I put them in two bags and I bury them off the freeway.
Of course. Well, so this guy that found them, he was working in the area. He's the owner of that company. This is an area that's been going through some changes and being worked on for quite some time. So a lot of people have questioned, well, why would anybody double bag her book bag and then bury it? Some have even said that this is similar to a parent killing one's child and then wrapping them up in a blanket and placing them somewhere, like some form of preservation. And
no, I think it's to possibly guard from scent dogs or something.
Well, the other thing too is people say, well, if someone killed her, why would they bother double bagging this item before burying it? Was it so that they could retrieve it at another time to preserve it as some kind of trophy?
Or to not get caught?
I think what I go to is the sheriff's statements at the time, and I found this to be very interesting because the story that's lived on for 20 years is that the bags were found buried 50 yards off of the side of the highway. The sheriff at the time said that because the land had been worked and worked over several times, he had evidence to believe that the bag, that someone discarded this, that the item was double bagged and simply thrown out of a moving vehicle at some point, and that it became buried over time because they were working the land. So that puts a whole different spin on things and makes a lot more sense when you think about it, rather than someone killing a child, double bagging this thing and burying it. Placing the item in trash bags seems to defeat the purpose of burying it.
Right.
But you do point out a good thing, of the idea that maybe you're trying to hide the scent or any type of scent that might come from that. But you're 26 miles away from the area in question.
Well, and the double bagging and throwing out the window can make sense. I would say if you're double bagging it, maybe somebody's just less likely willing to try to rip open two bags to see what's in it. They could just assume that it's trash and discard of it on the side of the road.
Yeah, I think the placing it in a trash bag, one, serves the purpose of concealing it until you have the opportunity to get rid of it. And then it conceals it further even after you've discarded it. People see, unfortunately, we live in a world where people throw shit out their windows.
Asshats.
And it sits on the side of the highway.
Filthy animals.
And so if you were to see a book bag, well, that might draw someone's attention much, much more than it would if someone saw a common black trash bag. Now, investigators with this finding announced that they considered Aisha's disappearance to be a criminal matter, and foul play was suspected after the book bag's discovery. Of course, that surrounding area was thoroughly searched afterwards, but other than the pants or the animal bones, no additional evidence was reportedly located at that time. One thing that I found really interesting here, Captain, And this is all based around the finding of the book bag. It was the sheriff's statement at the time. He's kind of going through some of the facts of the case, and he's given us a little more information here. So his statement was, several drivers witnessed her, Aisha, walking south along North Carolina Highway 18 around 4 a.m., but did not alert police. Her parents reported her missing a few hours later when they woke up and found Aisha's bed empty. More than a year later, her book bag was discovered buried along the same highway where she was last seen walking. Based on our investigation, we have reason to believe that individuals in this community or the surrounding area have knowledge of or information pertaining to the disappearance of Aisha. Very interesting to me that what he's saying in general there is now this area where the book bag's found is the point of our investigation rather than where she went missing from. We think someone in this area, 26 miles north, has information pertaining to Aisha's case. It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. Have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so damn expensive? It's all just radio waves. And how much can radio waves really cost? It seems like Big Wireless all got together and decided $100 a month. Now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you have a choice. For a limited time, all phone plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plan's jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited-time deal and get premium wireless for just $15 a month. I love Mint Mobile. They have great quality. They have wonderful service. I love saving money. Put them together and I'm getting great quality, great service, a wonderful phone plan for only $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor's ready to eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Day Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I am always on the go. I'm rather busy. And grabbing a quick meal for me used to mean eating the bad stuff. But I've switched to Factor. Now I simply grab a Factor meal from my refrigerator, heat, and then I am enjoying a delicious meal in just 2 minutes. And it's not loaded with the bad stuff. Head to factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50 and use code truecrimegarage50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month. That's code truecrimegarage50 at factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
All right, we're back. A quick announcement. We will be at CrimeCon in Austin, Texas. Our promo code is TCG10 for 10% off if you use our promo code. And also, I will be going, Nick cannot make it this year, to CrimeCon UK. And our promo code is the same, TCG10 for 10% off your tickets.
In January of 2014, detectives announced that they were looking into 57-year-old Donald Ferguson, who was arrested for the 1990 rape and murder of 7-year-old Shalonda Poole, whose body was found behind an elementary school in Greensboro, North Carolina. While investigating a seemingly unrelated sexual assault in 2013, the authorities in South Carolina entered his DNA into a national database and realized it matched the suspect sample in Shalonda's case. So they're in South Carolina, they're investigating a completely different case. They have some DNA that they throw into the system, and they come up with a hit to this other victim.
Right.
This murdered victim, 7-year-old murder victim, Shalonda Poole. So authorities, of course, are going to arrest this Donald Ferguson. They try him for it. He's found guilty. But what this gives us here is a potential suspect, because they want to know what this guy would have been doing in February of 2000.
Yeah.
It's reported that he was living about 40 miles from the city of Shelby at and around that time. So he could have had something to do. I will throw this out there, though. In the case of Shalonda Poole, she was a neighbor's daughter, and her body was found fairly close to their home. And unfortunately, when these cases are solved, and I mean, anybody can think back to cases that they've heard elsewhere or seen on TV, a lot of times when it's younger victims like this, especially young boys and girls, it's often a neighbor. Someone that has seen this child time and time again, maybe has some type of relationship with the family, maybe right. Doesn't, but it's usually someone that's in close proximity to the victim themselves.
The old creepy cock neighbor.
Yeah, so they looked into him. I don't know. I know nothing has come of it, because we would be having a much different discussion here today. That was back from 2014.
And one of the things that you haven't got into is, you know, this was 2000. She was 9 years old. The family didn't have a family computer, which some people think that's odd. And in today's standards, I think that would be a little strange for a family not to have some kind of access to the internet, whether it's through a cell phone, a tablet, or some other means. But in 2000, I didn't have a computer. I don't think, my parents were divorced, and I don't think either one of them had a computer at the time, or one that was working well, or had easy capabilities or easy access to the internet. So the grooming or the possibility that some pedo was in contact with her to get her to go out of her house that night would be somebody that the family would have had to know. And again, I don't think there's any evidence
or was
that
connected to circles that the family would know about. Her school, right, the church, the basketball team. Yeah, you're right. If some creep lured this kid out of her house, he didn't do it via computer into the home.
Right.
And you're right. There are people that, like, I've heard it and read it time and time again. People say Aisha had a very sheltered life.
Damn.
They just didn't have a computer. And
think about how sheltered this is. A couple of days before she goes missing, she's at her aunt's house, you know. And then the next day, she's at the basketball, and then she goes to her brother's
slumber party that has almost a dozen kids there. She's in Bible study classes, plays on the basketball team. She goes to school.
Right.
This is not a sheltered life. This is an extremely normal life.
I agree.
Her mother was on record at some point saying that they didn't have a computer because they didn't want any they had small children, 10 and 9 years old. They didn't see the need for a computer, nor did they want to mess with any of the headaches of monitoring what the kids may be doing on the computer.
Yeah, keep the
pedos out. The other thing,
out.
Too, sometimes if you can't afford something, you just don't buy it. I mean, I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say, yeah, in 2000, I didn't have a computer either. That doesn't mean that I was sheltered. No, I had one. It's just it worked horribly. I think it was one of those old Gateway computers that was all jammed up with Napster music.
Yeah, Napster music and porno.
And you know what? And I couldn't afford to replace the thing because I didn't make good money and they were expensive. So it doesn't point to a sheltered life, in my opinion.
Well, you should have told your girlfriend not to download all that porno.
All right, back to the case. So we have the FBI that comes out and they announce a suspect vehicle, which is believed to be either an early 1970s Lincoln Continental Mark IV or possibly a Ford Thunderbird, green in color with rust around the wheel wells.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you take these two cars and put them side by side, they look like the same car, just maybe this was the newer model and this is the older model, but they are different cars by different manufacturers.
Yeah, very similar vehicles. I can understand why if somebody's reporting this to authorities that they wouldn't be able to 100% say for certain that it was a Ford Thunderbird or a Lincoln Mark IV. What I do find extremely interesting about this tip is, look, she went missing in 2000. This is reported to be an early 1970s vehicle. That makes it not one of a kind, but fairly unique.
Yeah.
Where if you could find this vehicle or get a direct link to this vehicle, you're going to have a bigger piece of the pie to work with if you're an investigator. Now, one thing that I find weird is that there's no specifics given on where this new information came from. And I want to put new in air quotes there, air quotations there. New information. Is this something that they had for years? Or was this, in fact, new information? Because
I've seen a lot of people argue that because it could be something that they had, a tip that they had early on, and now that they're pulling this out of their back pocket. And look, and you know, we see this all the time, and we've heard John Douglas talk about this. These law enforcement agencies need to sometimes make a decision early on. Are we going to use the public for help or not? Mm-hmm. And if we are, then this tip, if this is not a new tip, but something they had early on, this is something that would have been better on to know early on, because it's pretty easy to get rid of a vehicle.
Well, and that's going to be my major hang-up with this case and with the investigation itself. Now, when in their press release, what is stated is that the vehicle was occupied two times. I don't know what that means. The sheriff at the time, this is Alan Norman, also said that the car was discovered by legwork. Because they want to know where this new information is coming from.
Right.
It was discovered by legwork between the sheriff's office, investigators, and the FBI, but would not go into any further detail about the new lead. The direct statement is that Aisha may have been sighted getting into a distinctive dark green vehicle, early 1970s model car, on the night that she was last seen. The vehicle, which had rust around the wheel wells, again, is thought to have been a Lincoln Mark IV or a Ford Thunderbird. Those photos, pictures, examples of those vehicles come up pretty regularly if you just Google Aisha DeGree's name.
Yeah, we'll post those on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
This is going to bring us up to October 2018. This case just leaves me shaking my head for many, many reasons. And I don't want to sound like I'm
Kermit the Frog
being uber critical of the sheriff's department, but I just can't help but I just don't understand this investigation. This is when the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office detectives appealed for information from the public about two items of interest. This was a book. This is McGilligut's Pool, which is a children's book by Dr. Seuss, and a New Kids on the Block concert t-shirt. Now, an investigator said that these items are vital clues in the Aisha DeGree investigation. At the time, investigators would not say where these items came from or why they believe them to be vital clues in Aisha in her case. It was later revealed that these two items were found in her book bag that was found in August of 2001. The book itself was later determined to have been borrowed, and we know this per a stamp inside the book. The book was borrowed from the Folston Elementary School Library in early 2000. The statement from the police and the FBI is that, Captain, I tell you, this makes me want to chug this beer and punch myself in the face.
Or punch yourself in the nuts.
They're stating that...
In the face.
Aisha did not check this book out. They're also stating that we don't know who checked it out because the records don't go back to the year 2000. Holy shit, let's explore all of the problems with everything that they just said. You can tell me that you know that the book was borrowed from the Folston Elementary School Library in early 2000, but you can't tell me who checked it out, but you can tell me that it wasn't Aisha? That seems awfully bizarre. The records don't go back to 2000. Well, when did you start looking for the records? Because now it's 2018, and you're saying the records don't go back to 2000. If these items did come from the book bag, like your website says,
yeah,
you found these items in August of 2001. You mean to tell me that the Folston Elementary School didn't have records of the previous school year then?
Right.
That's and if stupid. They didn't, again, how can you tell me that she didn't check out the book? It's absolutely just
okay, but the book,
bizarro.
Yeah, but the book to me is not that big of a mystery. She checked it out or somebody else checked it out, but she had that book. I believe she probably had that book at her house when she left that night, and it was in her book bag. The item that baffles me more is this New Kids on the Block shirt. It almost looks like a nightie on some level, and maybe she could have got it from somebody at that slumber party, but because the only record that I have of anybody talking about the New Kids on the Block shirt is her parents saying that wasn't her shirt. She didn't own that shirt. Okay, well, she was at a slumber party with how many people?
But they, again, I mean, you would think they would show that to all persons involved to determine that it wasn't hers, which is that's been the general statement that, and that's what was weird about when the book bag was found originally back in 2001. There was a statement by the sheriff saying, when asked what was in the book bag or in the trash bags, he says something like 99%, I can't remember which one it was, of everything that was found belonged to Aisha. And at the time, nobody knew what the hell that could mean. And then later, we fast forward to 17 years later, when they're telling us about this book that, and I get what you're saying. I think of much more importance is the New Kids on the Block t-shirt for the investigation.
Yeah.
I just find it incredibly weird that they would say, hey, this book was checked out from her school library, but she didn't check it out. You know, you could simply say, these items were found in her book bag. Tell us that in 2001 so we can actually do something with the information, not 17 years later. And don't make it so damn convoluted about the book itself. Just say it came from her school, but we don't have any evidence that she is brought it with her or that she checked it out. It could have come from another source. And by the way, this New Kids on the Block shirt, it had to have come from another source because we've showed it to everybody that knew her. And everyone says the same thing. She had no reason to have that in her possession. In fact, that shirt would have been, that was from the 1989-1990 Hanging Tough World Tour that the New Kids on the Block went on this tour.
Yeah, absolutely classic.
She wasn't even born until August of 2000. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, of 1990.
Still could be a fan. I mean, well, of a legendary band like that. I mean,
well, I get that, but
they're
don't,
up there with
don't
the Beatles.
Can we all agree that if the authorities and her family say that it's not hers, it wasn't hers?
Yeah, but my only issue with that is, again, I don't know the number of people that were at this slumber party. I believe personally that most of those items in her book bag were in her book bag, probably starting on the 11th. And then going into the slumber party, because the candies that her coach gave her on the 12th, you know, we found those. So that's what also makes me believe, oh yeah, well, her basketball uniform would have been packed away as well.
Right. And I agree 100% with you, but I also want to keep in mind, this is something that law enforcement may know. We've already seen time and time again, they have information on stuff in this case and they're just not releasing it to the public. They may have confirmation from mom and or dad that items were packed at a different time. And really, really the cutoff is that basketball uniform.
Yeah, possibly.
Because that's something that's very simple that we know that she would have had to have taken it out of a backpack at some point to wear it on Saturday. And did it go right back into the backpack afterwards, or was it washed and put away in her room? Mm-hmm. These are things that the parents and law enforcement would know at the time. Here's my big, big problem with this case. It's time and time again, I feel like the most crucial pieces of evidence are just being swept aside. It's almost like they're brushed under the rug. It seems like law enforcement, for the most part, believed that something weird was going on that probably involved foul play very quickly in this little girl's disappearance. They appealed to the public for help. They just didn't appeal to the public, I think, in the right manner.
Right. Again, like you said, this case is really frustrating. I mean, one, why did she leave her house? Doesn't make a lot of sense. Maybe sleepwalking. Maybe she was lured out by somebody. And then all these items that don't seem to be connected to her, that nobody can connect back to her. A book, a nightshirt, and then this picture of this other girl.
Well, we'll go through our thoughts in some better detail here in a minute. Before I want to hit on a couple of other items here, Captain. In November of last year, November of 2020, an inmate named Marcus Mellon, who is he's been convicted of sex crimes against children from 2014.
Convicted piece of shit.
He wrote a letter to the Shelby Star newspaper claiming that Aisha Degree was murdered and he knows where to find her. Mm-hmm. So, of course, these claims were under investigation for many months, but not verified.
Again, another problem with this case, though, is that road itself is, what do you say, 180-some miles?
145.
Yeah, okay. So that's a lot of distance for even somebody to go, oh yeah, we picked this girl up and then eventually we put her remains back on that road or whatever. You know, they, if they're off by 10 miles, probably too much for the searchers to figure out.
So in his letter to the newspaper, he wrote, Aisha Degree has been missing for over 20 years. About 4 months ago, I had found out her whereabouts and what had happened to her. She was killed and then took and buried. I do know how and what town she is in. I hope you get this letter and do come see me. It's on the up and up. So it took a while for investigators to... They were saying that it was COVID that was slowing them down on interviewing, and it sounds like there was an outbreak where this man is being housed, where he was serving his time. So that seems very likely. But later, in fact, just very recently, I can't remember if it was days or just a couple weeks ago, but authorities came out and said, you know, we've spoke to this inmate. We've looked into everything he said. It's not led us anywhere. We don't know if this is, they're not questioning the credibility of the information as far as this guy believing what he's telling them. What it is that they figured out that this is all information that he's received second, third, fourth hand.
Right.
It's information that's traveled from person to person to person to person that seemed to have worked its way to him. And by this point, it has no relevant information or anything that they can use for their investigation. Over the 21 years that Aisha's been missing, there's been three different inmates that's come forward saying they know where she is and what happened to her. We discussed two of them in detail. The third one, I believe, took place in 2004, and I kind of skipped over that because it was really nothing. It was an inmate saying this is where her body can be found. They searched there and searched there and searched there, and it was just wasted expense, wasted efforts. They found zero there, nothing.
Right.
So for me, Captain, when we talk about the thoughts and feelings and suspicions that we have in this case, the thing that really breaks my heart that I mentioned in yesterday's episode, you know, some of these cases really get to you, and some of them it almost feels like the people aren't so real, that they're, you know, actors on a screen somewhere. But this one, what I cannot shake from my mind and from my heart is thinking about that young girl walking down the side of the street out in the country in the pitch black cold and rain on her own. That has pierced my heart and will stick with me for some time. That breaks my heart to think about that. And then I keep going back to the idea of, yes, there's a chance she might have been sleepwalking. I can agree with that. But if she wasn't, this is the act of a desperate person. She's either running away from something horrible or running toward something. And whatever it was, it had a sense of urgency. The storm was not going to stop her. The dark was not going to stop her. Whatever it was, she was going to go and carry out whatever mission she set herself on. And I don't have, I know some people do, and I'm no smarter than anybody else.
Definitely not.
But I don't have any suspicions about Aisha's parents or about the family. I don't see any evidence that there was anything weird going on. I really don't think she was running away from anything. I think she was very likely running towards something. And my gut will not allow me to feel suspicious about the parents. And look, I've called out parents in many, many other cases.
Mm-hmm.
Many other cases. Usually that's my go-to. When I first started reviewing this thing,
my go-to is normally the parents.
Well, when I first started reviewing this, I thought, how could it not be the parents? Or one of the parents.
Yeah, but what's interesting, I think sometimes you have to have the eyeball test and the earball test. And like you said, you can go look up interviews they've done with Montel Williams, with Oprah Winfrey being on America's Most Wanted. A lot of times, too, they might seek out local publicity for a case. But if they're in on it, a lot of times the parents will shy away from a bigger national attention. nothing that they say to me, or I mean, there's really nothing that they have said ever that I ever felt it was suspicious in any way. And I know they both took polygraph tests and passed those and allowed in the court of law. But it's like, well, police use those as a tool, and they passed both of them. And they just, to me, they passed the eyeball test and the earball test.
And it's 21 years later. If it were the parents, usually that's a very easy conclusion to come to for law enforcement. We wouldn't be sitting here having the same conversation. And then you have to believe, let's say you do suspect the parents. Well, then you have to convince yourself that somehow there's just some coincidence that Aisha or someone matching her description was seen walking alone in the middle of the night on the side of the highway
by multiple people,
and that somehow her belongings ended up in this tool shed, and that somehow her book bag was double bagged and thrown out the side of the highway 26 miles north of that.
Yeah.
And what I think here, that this is going back to the chugging a beer and punching myself in the face.
In the face.
The thing here that I cannot get over, Captain, is, you know, you hear the old saying, don't bury the lead. You know, sometimes with journalism, the most important part of the story was three paragraphs down, didn't even make the headline. I feel like when I review this investigation that, unfortunately for Aisha and her family, I feel like investigators and journalists have managed to bury the lead time and time again. And it makes zero sense to me. The first bit of information that was found that possibly could be connected to Aisha's case, and I say possibly because I'm trying to be responsible, I firmly believe that it is related to Aisha's case. And I'll tell you why. It's that photograph of the unknown girl. There is no reason for that photograph to be in the Turner's tool shed. This shed was located more than a football field off of the highway. It had no doors, so it wasn't like something that Aisha had to figure out her way to get into. And it had a light, because I've read people saying that, well, she would have had to have known where that tool shed was. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. But the Turners clearly say in an interview, we have a light that's on that tool shed. You could spot it from the road, even though it's that far from the road, in the pitch black. Maybe she simply went in there to get out from the rain. Or maybe, as you said, maybe something spooked her, or the truck driver stopping, attempting to help her, scares her, and she decides to flee somewhere, and that's her only shelter. But what we do know is, regardless of how they got there, items belonging to Aisha Degree were found in and around that tool shed, along with a wallet-sized photograph of an unknown girl, a photo that was shown to her family, to her school, to people that knew Aisha, and everyone said the same thing. I don't know who that girl is in the photograph, nor do I have any idea where the photograph would have came from.
Well, it's clearly a school picture.
Taking that information, what did we do with it to ask the public for help? Because here's the problem with this case. Okay? The book, the library book, it's quite unique. And in fact, that stamp putting it at the Folsom Elementary School makes it one of a kind. The New Kids on the Block concert t-shirt.
Classic.
It's unique. It's not one of a kind, but it is from a specific tour. They only had so many stops on that tour. And to take it a step further, I'm asking the public for a little bit of help here. If you read the fine print on that shirt, that tour was the Hanging Tough World Tour from 1989-1990. But the fine print on it says Winterland Productions 1990, Big Step Productions 1990, made in the USA. So I'm wondering, does that mean that it was made in 1990 and only available for purchase during the 1990 year of that 2-year tour?
A good point.
If anybody has any information about that, let us know. So that item is not unique, but I mean not one of a kind, but it is unique.
Right?
The cars, the description of the vehicle.
Very unique.
Not one of a kind, but again, unique. What is unique? What is one of a kind? I'm jumbling my words like crazy. What is one of a kind here in this story, no matter what, you cannot shake it, is this little girl that's in this other photograph. Mm-hmm. She is one of a kind. We've not been able to identify who that person is. And you know why we haven't been able to identify her is because I don't think hardly anybody's seen this damn picture. That when they put it in the newspaper asking for people's help, it was at the bottom of page 75.
Well, and that's why the prosecutor's podcast reached out to us to cover this case.
That's where I get all my news, the bottom of page 75 on a Thursday. If you really wanted to locate this girl or people that know this girl or where potentially this photograph came from, you got to get it out there to the public. It's not a picture of Aisha. It's not anybody that knows Aisha is saying that they know this little girl.
It would have helped if it was on Oprah's show.
Well, I have not seen the segment on Oprah's show, nor did I see the segment on America's Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. But very, very little remains of this photograph. In fact, there's a lot of reports about Aisha's case to this day that don't even include the photograph being ever found or mentioned anywhere.
Can you send me the photograph real quick?
I will send you the photograph, but this is on law enforcement. This photograph should have been, you remind the public over and over again, we're still looking for Aisha, but we're also looking for information on this photograph. It's not just coincidence that this photograph is found with her belongings in the same area on the day that she goes missing.
Yeah, but law enforcement's people, and people make mistakes. And
thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
But also,
of course, I make mistakes too.
But we don't know what information that they have that is not released to the public. So we don't know what it's really hard to say. I think sometimes to go, oh, well, if it was me, I would do this. Well, we're also looking back on.
Right. But we also know that according to their own statements that they sat on that book in the New Kids on the Block shirt for 17 years. How long did they sit on the information about the car? And like you pointed out, if we're going to ask the public for help, let's ask the public for help.
Well, I think that's where law enforcement.
They dropped the ball. Here's the thing. I understand more
well,
than...
No. It's not always dropping the ball. I think it's what strategy are you going to take? If you're going to ask for the public's help, then you need to go with that strategy full force, not half-ass it. And I think some of these... Why is it that we can look back on some of these investigations and just go, man, this seems like a chaotic horse shit? It's because they didn't pick a strategy and just go with it. And then you see these items come out 20 years later and you go, nobody's going to remember that. Or half the people that would remember that, they died 10 years ago.
Right. And I know better than most and understand better than most the idea of withholding information to save the integrity of your investigation and the integrity of your case. I really freaking get that. The problem, though, is what I have here is what we're dealing with today in this case. There's information that could have been put out there in a better way, in a more timely manner, that could have led us to a better situation than where we sit today. Okay, so maybe you run the risk of not being able to get a conviction because you released too much to the public. You don't know what else you would find using that information. What else you would find to get that conviction based off of the information you released. The other issue too is, and this is her mother's words, she's having a hard time grieving for her daughter who's been gone for 21 years. There's no body. There's no gravesite to go to. At the very least, it's not what anybody would want, but justice, finding this girl alive would be amazing. That's the goal. Justice for this girl, if something terrible happened to her and she's no longer with us, is the second goal. But at the very least, maybe we could find the remains for this suffering family, and we would still be in a better situation than we are here today. So I think that law enforcement, and I think that the media, in a weird way, intentional or not, buried the lead here on this case. I think there was a lot of good information out there that could have helped been provided to the public in a timely manner with better detailed information. Something good may have come of it. Now, we want to point out some things here real quick, and this is a quote from from Aisha's mother, Aquila, who said, "We're hoping and we're praying that she's had a halfway decent life, even though we didn't get to raise her. She was 9 years old and she'll be 30 this year." So this is from an interview about a year ago. "So we've missed everything, but I don't care. If she walked in the door right now, I wouldn't care what I missed. All I want is to see her." Now, the FBI continues to offer a $25,000 reward for information leading to the person or persons responsible for Aisha's disappearance. The community and the sheriff's office are offering an additional $20,000 reward, bringing the total reward to $45,000. If you have any information about Aisha Degree, please call the tip line at 704-672-6100 or the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678.
For more True Crime Garage, make sure you check out our old episodes. They are now available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, check out our bonus show called Off the Record. That's only available on Stitcher Premium. Colonel, do we have any recommended reading?
This week we are recommending the new book Maniac by one of my favorite true crime authors, Harold Schechter. We have recommended Harold Schechter's books before. Not too long ago, we recommended his book Hell's Princess. Well, his new book, Maniac, The Bath School Disaster and the Birth of the Modern Mass Killer, is out and available everywhere. Mr. Schechter is a twice nominated author for the Edgar Award. He specializes in serial killers, and he is absolutely one of the best true crime historians and authors. Go see why by picking up his new book, Maniac, The Bath School Disaster and the Birth of the Modern Mass Killer. Check out that great title and many, many more at truecrimegarage.com on our recommended page.
And until next week,
be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.